This is Alumni Aloud, a podcast by Graduate Center students for Graduate Center students. In each episode, we talk with a GC graduate about their career path, the ins and outs of their current position, and the career advice they have for students. This series is sponsored by the Graduate Center's Office of Career Planning and Professional Development. Kate Bendoli conducted this episode's interview. Kate works at the Office of Career Planning and Professional Development and is a PhD candidate in philosophy. She interviewed Dr. Carolyn Newhouse, who talked with us about getting into the field of bioethics research from the philosophy program at the Graduate Center.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Kate.
It's nice to see you and talk to you today. So my first question for you is just to tell us a little bit about what your journey to the Hastings Center was like, and to just tell us a little bit more about how you ended up where you are today.
Sure, thanks. Thanks for having me. So my journey, I suppose, we can start while I was at the Graduate Center as a PhD student in philosophy. And I feel like I knew fairly early on as a student that I wanted to do philosophy that was a bit more applied. So which is to say not purely theoretical work, but work for which I could see practical implications, policy implications, and sort of a real-world application. And that really does cover a lot of philosophy. I think philosophy gets a bad rep as a purely theoretical discipline, and all aspects of philosophy are in some sense applied. But from the sort of standpoint of the philosophy as a discipline, sort of the applied areas are sort of bioethics, business ethics, and other ethical domains. So I was really drawn to bioethics as a discipline. So actually my first entry point into bioethics was taking a neuroethics course at NYU, Department of Philosophy. And that was in part because those classes just weren't offered by the GC philosophy program. And I recognized that I would have to go elsewhere to take those courses. So I took advantage of the consortium of schools here in New York and enrolled for that course at NYU with a philosopher named Matthew Liao. And that just kind of hooked me. That was in my second semester of second year. So I'd already taken quite a few classes in philosophy and kind of knew that I needed to do something else to really keep me engaged. So took that course, was really hooked, continued taking courses, again, at NYU, actually, because they, again, weren't offered internally. And so by the time I was ready to be, before I go to candidacy, there was one opportunity sort of internal to the Graduate Center, which was an ethics fellowship at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. There was a professor there named Rosamond Rhodes, who also got her PhD in philosophy at the Graduate Center of CUNY. And she, very lovingly and generously, now essentially invites Graduate Center philosophy students to take part in an ethics fellowship program at Mount Sinai. And this is gonna sound kind of crass, but essentially we're TAs. It's like a fancy name for a TA ship in which I was mentoring and leading discussion sections with medical students who were also learning about bioethics. So that sort of like brings me to year two, three-ish, where I was taking classes at NYU and also learning ethics really practically at Mount Sinai School of Medicine.
How did you find out about the Mount Sinai Fellowship?
So that was, again, it's an internal program that Rosamond administers. It's a bit of a mix of like application and invitation. Students who are interested in bioethics and who have it kind of have to advocate a little bit and express that to Rosamond. She's not on campus here. Then to sort of register with the department and with Rosamond that you are really interested in bioethics. And that kind of initiates an application process. I think that was third year. So I was already doing things and taking courses and thinking about what I would want to write my dissertation on. And I decided to do a dissertation in a sort of squarely philosophical discipline, metaethics. So my dissertation's on the nature of moral reasons. That was kind of strategic, actually, already recognizing that I would probably shift in a more applied direction and go toward bioethics. My advisors, including Rosamond and Matthew, but also internal to the GC, recommended doing a dissertation in philosophy, in part to gain that skill set. and to really work on honing my philosophical research skills and methods, but also just to keep a foot in the door, that I didn't to sort of leave philosophy too quickly. And I think that was totally the right advice, and I'm really glad that I wrote my dissertation on metaethics. But at the same time that I was writing my dissertation, I then applied for a job in bioethics. So I was a part-time research assistant in the NYU Division of Medical Ethics, which, in a really complicated and long story, is not the same NYU where I took my classes. So there's a Center for Bioethics in the Graduate School of Arts and Sciences, which is now actually in the School of Public Health. And then there's a separate medical ethics division at the School of Medicine. So I was an RA in the School of Medicine with Dr. Arthur Kaplan, who's a bioethicist. I loved my dissertating years, in part because I got to do this really cool philosophy project that I enjoyed, and on a topic that was and is really helpful for me to have studied and developed a view about. But at the same time, being an RA was just like a crash course in this whole new field of study, totally different research methods, totally different kinds of readings and interactions, totally different kind of writing, and I just loved all of it.
And were you doing those two things concurrently?
Concurrently.
You were writing in both modes at the same time.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I was also babysitting, practically full-time, which I probably shouldn't mention, but, you do what you can.
Why not?
And that's totally okay. And there, I started looking at postdocs in bioethics, of which there are about maybe 10 to 12 around the country at different universities. So I knew that my sort of pool was limited, but that I wasn't ready to commit to an academic philosophy job, or I just didn't really want to. But sort of the route in bioethics was a postdoc route. Bioethics is a bit of a complicated field, and maybe we can talk about that next, but some bioethics postdocs are at medical schools, and some bioethics postdocs are in arts and sciences schools or schools of humanities. So that kind of changes the tenor of the postdoc a little bit and sort of the application process. And I was open to both of those, and sort of one looks a little bit more like philosophy and one looks a little bit more like clinical ethics, but I was applying to all of them, essentially. But I ended up being able to stay at NYU for my postdoc, which was in a school of medicine. And that was supposed to be a two-year postdoc, but halfway through, so during my first year, a job at the Hastings Center opened up as a research scholar. So I applied, and what feels like miraculously got the job as research scholar, and I couldn't pass it up.
So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about how you were hired at the Hastings Center. You had already been on the job market once, and then very quickly, again, you were on the job market. And what did it look like when you were applying there versus when you were applying for the postdoc process?
So it doesn't look all that different, actually. So the Hastings Center is a research institute, and so it wasn't all that different, actually, from sort of my postdoc application process in terms of putting together a research statement, a research sort of packet of publications, and a sort of statement of what I would, where I see myself going in the future. So those kind of basic things that you would think about in an academic job search or an academic job application or a postdoc application was kind of the same components. What's really different about that application process was that it doesn't have a teaching component. So I did have lots and lots of what felt like endless interviews. phone interviews and then in person, the whole day. You give a talk, you do all that stuff. But since I don't teach as part of my job, I didn't have to submit a teaching statement or anything like that. But I will say I was offered the job at the end of April. So it probably a bit later than would normally happen. But then they needed me to start as soon as possible. So I started the first week of June.
And you were still in your postdoc at NYU.
And I was still in my postdoc at NYU.
So did you end that early?
I ended it early in terms of it was supposed to be 2 years and I left a year early. I left NYU on a Friday and started my job at the Hastings Center on a Monday.
Whoa.
Thankfully I had to move to the Burbs. Uh-huh. But I didn't have to move states.
Wow.
My partner did not have to leave his job. I've now been in the position about 18 months, and I have to say the first year was pretty heavy into grant writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a private independent research institute, and we rely pretty heavily on research funding, grants essentially. So it's a pretty big component of my job is grant writing.
And was that something new that you were doing?
It's something that I had already done at NYU as a research assistant. So I wasn't writing my own grants at NYU, but I had been helping to write grants. So it's a skill set that I had picked up along the way and just a process that I had learned about. The grants that I had been applying to at NYU and still apply to at the Hastings Center are federally, tend to be federally funded. And that grant process is crazy. So I was really glad to have like already walked through that entire process actually twice before sort of being expected to do it. I'm never solely I'm still very much part of a team, but sure, you know, with a bit more responsibility for the grant. So one thing I really love about the Hastings Center is that we're a relatively small research staff at just like 10 people, and most of our funded projects anyway are collaborative, so we'll have three or four of us on any one project. So the grants that I've been writing, and thankfully I'm now received a couple of them, but you know, and we'll continue to write a lot in the future, are much more collaborative. Mm-hmm. And that's very different, I think, than inside of a university where a PI is just like one person who's solely responsible for writing the grant, for conceiving of the grant and whatnot. It's much more collaborative at the Hastings Center, where almost all of our grants have two PIs and then two or three co-investigators. So I'd say it's sort of like a give and take between obviously what the scholars are interested in, what I want to work on, what's fundable at any given moment in time, which is a changeable thing, but something I have to be responsive to, and also what's important. As a sense at the Hastings Center, as the sort of only independent bioethics research institute in the country, that we sometimes take on projects that our colleagues in universities couldn't because of their sort of critical stance or the topic or the funder. How we decide any given project, what we're going to write about, is like a bit of a give and take.
So I wonder, you said it's something a little while back. You said you were gesturing toward the complication of bioethics as a field. And so I'm wondering if you could just say a little more about what that complication is and what bioethics looks like from your perspective, having been integrated in these various ways.
Yeah, so bioethics, I like to think of as a field of study. It's not a discipline in the sense that there aren't any prescribed research methods to people who call themselves bioethicists. So bioethicists can come from lots of different backgrounds. Mine happens to be philosophy, but social sciences, urban planning, nursing, medical field, legal experts, lawyers, I mean, policy, health policy, political science, and like people from pretty much any field you can imagine who are doing work that's related, the sort of unifying theme is that it's related to values in medicine and research.
Biomedical Does that mean research. That you're working with people who are coming from lots of different backgrounds?
Yes.
Oh, exciting.
Yes. Cool. So the Hastings Center staff is interdisciplinary, and the projects that we do, the sort of the projects that we run, tend to bring in to the Hastings Center people from a lot of different fields. So all of our work is from its conception interdisciplinary, which is one thing that I just attracted me so much to the field was that I get to read a lot of different stuff, mostly in academic journals. So it's not like I'm, you know, just reading newspapers or something, and it's still rigorous research, but I get to read way beyond philosophy, which was and it is very exciting to me. I get to write in different ways. So I'm still incentivized and still want to write for more philosophical audiences and use philosophical research methods, but my work also tends to bring in sociology and history and other humanities disciplines, documentaries, in ways that philosophers can do and often and sometimes do really well, but it doesn't necessarily fly on a job market.
And when did you like see that as something that was possible in bioethics?
I think I really liked the flexibility in like thinking styles, that I didn't have to just think as an analytic philosopher. I could be a bit more flexible and in how I would come to an issue and think about an issue, how it gripped me. And then also in writing. I came to philosophy in part because I really like writing philosophy and I like that writing style. For me, I think it fits. But doing that for a wider variety of audiences through lots of different kinds of writing.
Can you tell us a little bit about your work within bioethics that you're working on now?
Sure, yeah. One thing that I'm working on right now and have been for a couple of years has to do with genetically modifying non-human organisms. So the sort of poster child for this is genetically modifying mosquitoes to combat malaria, dengue, chikungunya, Zika, and other mosquito-borne illnesses, and different mosquitoes for every one of those, but in general, the point's the same. And there's various different ways of genetically modifying mosquitoes and releasing them. The idea is to release them into the environment, and then depending on the kind of genetic modification you've done, it's expected to have an impact on the population of mosquitoes, either lowering the population of mosquitoes and ultimately eliminating it, or changing some genetic trait in the mosquito such that it's essentially inoculated or immunized against the disease that it carries. So the science is really complicated, and that's another thing about bioethics, is that you have to be very willing to engage with science and scientists, which is another thing I really like. But bracketing that, what I'm interested in is, how do we decide whether, when, and how to release a genetically modified organism into the shared environment? So bioethics historically, or sort of a subfield of bioethics, is research ethics. And very commitment of research ethics is human subjects protection, as I'm sure many GC students know, having gone through an IRB process, is that you have to ask individuals to consent to research as a condition of respecting their autonomy and personhood. The problem is, in this kind of research, in this kind of biomedical research, you can't actually really go door to door and meaningfully ask every participant, is it okay if this scientific team releases genetically modified organisms into the shared environment? And there's various reasons for that. So sort of, what are the processes by which communities, in a local sense, national sense, and possibly even international sense, given the reach of some of the organisms being modified, should we decide to go forward with this research agenda? So I'm sort of drawing on a background in research ethics, which even within bioethics is a subfield, to think more broadly about how we make collective decisions about particular stewarding the environment and non-human animals.
So I'm wondering about the kinds of things that you did while you were a grad student here that you feel, especially retrospectively, really helped you to prepare for the kind of work that you're doing now in the way that you're doing it now.
So one thing that I already mentioned was seeking opportunities outside of my coursework and outside of the philosophy department that were really interesting to me. So no one told me that I should go take a neuroethics class. Like, that was a thing that I decided was important to me and that I wanted to, that was a topic area that I really wanted to learn about. So I think just sort of having the initiative to seek out and to really take seriously like those kinds of outside opportunities is one. But then, I mean, I think from a more personal standpoint, one thing that was incredibly helpful to me was like finding my tribe within the philosophy department. And that also took a little bit of trial and error and didn't happen initially, but by the time I was like second, third year, I had found a really amazing group of women who were doing really incredible work, and we really supported each other in ways that I think like I still don't appreciate, just like how important it was to have found a group of colleagues, my peers, who were willing to read my work and I read theirs. We had a writing accountability group and would actually meet like every other week in one of our apartments to go through the writing sample or the letters or whatever we had for that week and give each other constructive feedback. So to like find a group of people where I could like practice both of those skills in a safe space was super valuable, and I think it's made me a lot better at doing it now. But it also just gave me a lot of confidence to put myself out there a little bit more in ways that I think I wouldn't have been able to do had I not found that group of people. So I think, like, it's okay to, like, try out different friend groups, and if you're feeling like you don't have that initially, it doesn't mean that it won't appear at some point in your graduate career. And also make it. Like, if those things don't exist in your program right now, ask just one person to be in a writing accountability group and start small. But I think just, like, honing those skills of how to give and receive criticism in any job is a really important thing to know how to do and to feel comfortable doing.
You sort of made some recommendations just now, and I'm wondering if there are other things you would recommend to students who are current graduate students now that you think are really important things.
I think it's important to have interests and to pursue interests outside of your academic field, and also to know that it's okay to spend your time doing those things instead of reading or working on your dissertation or taking another class. I think I realize now just how much more freedom I had as a graduate student. And as a graduate student, I always felt like, oh, when I have a job, that's when I'll be able to do all those things that I'm not doing. It's like, when you have a job, you're just gonna be like 10 times busier than you are as a graduate student. So if there are, like, you have hobbies or interests or anything else that you want to pursue, I think graduate school is actually a really great time to do it. And I know that probably sounds overwhelming because graduate school feels really busy and you also have no money, but it's actually, from a life perspective, a pretty good time to like take advantage of the freedom that you have, especially sort of cognitive and freedom and mental space you have to think about other pursuits and like think about other areas where you could be happy. I'll tell, so this funny story that like sticks out so strongly. So I think it was my second year. I was, you know, graduate teaching fellow at one of the campuses, and one of the faculty there came up to me and said, if there's anything else you could do that would make you happy, you should do that instead of going into philosophy.
Hmm.
And at the time I was just like, you're super curmudgeonly, man. Like, did you just come from a bad faculty meeting? But I think it also just, it did get me thinking, like, there are a lot of things in this world that make me really happy, and philosophy is one of them. Reading philosophy, writing philosophy, doing philosophy is one of them, but it's certainly not the only thing. And him saying that was almost like permission that I didn't need to, like, do other things that make me happy. I think just, like, the idea that, like, oh, it's okay if I don't have a tenure-track philosophy job. Like, for someone to be like, it's okay, A, if you don't even want it, actually was big. And it's also okay to not have it and to try other things, to pursue other things. And so, again, I mean, my job right now is I call it quasi-academic, because a lot of the standards for me are very much the same as the standards for people on a tenure-track job or even tenured. But it's also not in many ways, in part because I'm not teaching. And it's at a very different kind of institute that affords me a lot more flexibility.
So what does it look like for you to be an employee of a research institute? What's your day look like?
So with one caveat, which is that the Hastings Center is a very specific kind of research institute. It's very small. Our whole staff is about 20 to 25, and about half of us are researchers. So we're quite a bit smaller than what you might think of as your typical think tank. And we have a beautiful campus in Garrison, New York, in an old converted mansion. So it's just like a lovely place to go, which also maybe makes it different than most offices. So my day to day is that I go to this very idyllic old mansion on the Hudson River, and I do have an office. I do tend to go there nearly, like, I would say 4 days a week. I can work from home, which is also really nice. And part of the reason I do that is just to avoid the commute. My day, every day looks a little bit different, and it kind of depends on the projects that I'm working on. So I have funded projects, the sort of collaborative projects I was describing before, and then I also continue to do grant writing and project development in various capacities. And I have some of my own work that I continue to work on that's not grant-funded and not collaborative, or at least not with my Hastings Center colleagues, so I sort of have to protect time to do my own research in that sense. And other things that I think make the Hastings Center different from a university, or what I would do inside of a university, is that we have a visiting scholars program. So on any given day, we might have one or two people who are actually staying at the Hastings Center. We have apartments on campus that I don't live in, but that our visitors can come and stay in who are doing projects related to bioethical issues. We have visiting scholars around who sometimes give presentations or who are just looking for conversation partners. So that's another sort of aspect of my day-to-day. And then another thing that I really love that the Hastings Center does is that we have a big emphasis on public engagement and public education about bioethical topics. So that sort of manifests in two ways. One is through the media. So oftentimes, it's sort of intermittent and comes and goes with news cycles, but I'll often talk to journalists about stories that they're writing about bioethical topics, and sometimes in more of like an educative role. So like just this week, I was talking to a documentary filmmaker who's doing a documentary on genetically modifying both humans and non-human organisms. So I got to just sort of have a conversation with him about the documentary, about some of my takes on what his work is, and sort of explore opportunities to work together. But like, it's very sort of informational at that stage, just sort of people who are in the orbit, but not necessarily academics, people who are creating materials, whether that's news stories, documentaries, books, graphic novels, for public consumption that address the issues that the Hastings Center writes about. So that's sort of a big part of my job that's super fun. And I get to think really, that's a place where I get to think really flexibly about how to present ideas and also to clarify them in creative ways. I'm not all that creative. Thankfully, the people I talk to are much more creative, but I hope that I can help them clarify things. And then another is with teachers. So this summer, we had our first professional development workshop for high school teachers, and we're hoping that that's like an ongoing thing. So we essentially teach teachers to incorporate bioethics into their science classes so that as students, as high school students are, for example, learning about genetics, they're also learning about ethical issues when it comes to genetically modifying humans or animals. So I'm also developing educational programs for, in particular, high school teachers, but it could be brought into others who are open to teaching bioethics.
Within your own research that you are also pursuing sort of independently, but also while at the Hastings Center, is that expected? Is that part of the role that you're expected to pursue? Or is it sort of like an additional bonus that you can pursue, but it's optional? Like, what's the expectation there?
I would say a little bit of both. So from the sort of project development standpoint, and even grant writing standpoint, you know, if I hope to get a grant in a couple of years about a topic that I'm interested in, I sort of have to show that I've actually thought about that topic. The easiest way to do that is through publishing on it. So it's sort of, I know that it's instrumentally valuable to continue to pursue sort of independent things that I'm independently interested in, so that down the line I can apply for grants on those topics. But I think it's also just good to have my own interests and pursue things that I'm enjoying and might not turn into anything, but I like to read about. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder, obviously, to make time for those kinds of things, but I try.
So when you're applying for these grants, who's your competition for the grants, and what does your grant application need to look like in order to be competitive?
So that's another reason to continue publishing sort of independently. When I'm applying for a grant, my competition is almost always people inside universities. So I have to sort of look like a university candidate or university professor to be competitive for certain grants, especially federal funders, but increasingly foundations as well. So I do have to publish at more or less the same rate that people inside universities publish. I mentioned the sort of independent interests go above and beyond the grant-funded projects that I'm collaborating on, which are also churning out publications. So it's not sort of like expected of me over and above the expectations of sort of normal academic production. but I'm like very aware of the fact that, especially when it becomes most salient in within the context of grant writing, that again, my peers in that are university professors. So I have to look on paper like that.
And does publication look like what you expected it would look like?
Yeah.
This sounds to me like so much from the pre-PhD side of things. It sounds like a lot of publication.
It is.
But does this sound like the same pace that you'd be expected to produce in a tenure track position?
Well, so the big difference is that my publications are not discipline specific. I publish mostly in bioethics journals, which are by nature somewhat interdisciplinary. I haven't published in just philosophy journals, although that's not for lack of interest. it's just how things are shaking out right now. But I also publish in medical journals quite frequently, and journals that are aimed at scientists. I consider those publications a bit more of an educative role and sort of synthesis. So I'm doing sort of less rigorous analysis and a bit more presentation, still argument, but sort of with a different purpose. So the pace of publication is actually probably higher than the pace of publication I would have if I was tenure track in a philosophy department. But that's because I am encouraged to publish and I'm invited to publish in a lot of different kinds of outlets. So it's much different to publish a sort of 8,000 word philosophy article than it is to publish a 2,000 word thing in even the Journal of the American Medical Association, which is by all accounts a fabulous journal. But it's just, again, a very different writing style. And how those compare to each other doesn't really match up. So the standards I have sort of internal to my organization are very different than the standards that a tenure track professor has.
Did you have expectations coming into your position? Like, what's been different about the position that you have now than you expected?
So one thing that surprised me and continues to overwhelm me is the breadth of topics that I'm researching on any given day, week, or month, or year. And I find that really exciting. Like, I try to look at it through silver linings, and I really like being able to sort of bounce around. But at the same time, I've had to learn a lot about a lot of different kinds of scientific happenings and goings on. So as sort of someone who's studying scientific research ethics, you have to know the science, you have to sort of understand what's going on in labs and around the world, and that can feel quite overwhelming. So I think like what surprised me is probably that like I actually haven't specialized as much as I thought maybe I would. And if anything, like the amount of things that I need to know just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You become more and more aware of how much you don't know, which everyone tells you, and that's totally true.
But maybe it's kind of exciting because you get to see that there are all these new avenues and opportunities for learning and researching.
And for someone like me who has a short attention span, it's really nice to be able to flip back and forth between them. Actually, that was another reason where like I didn't think I would really enjoy a tenure track job is in part like the expectation of specialization and how much time you have to spend on any particular task and any particular research agenda. Like, that really didn't appeal to me. And I think I like only made it through writing my dissertation because I had this huge distraction, which was like learning the field of bioethics. And if I had been only writing my dissertation, I don't think I would have done it nearly as efficiently as I did. One more thing I do want to plug is I mentioned that the Hastings Center has a visiting scholars program and that bioethics is super interdisciplinary and people from all different disciplines are welcome in the field. So this is only to encourage Graduate Center students to look up the Hastings Center, and if you're doing anything related to the history of medicine, health policy, urban planning, educational programs, those all have a place in the field, and we're located just 70 miles up the Hudson River on a beautiful, idyllic campus. So if you need a respite from New York and a place to do some thinking about medicine and research, you should totally consider visiting us at the Hastings Center and feel free to get in touch with me and ask any questions.
Thanks so much for talking with me today about your journey, your academic journey, and also about the work you're doing now and all your thoughts about this, Carolyn.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Carolyn for walking us through her journey from the philosophy program here at the Grad Center to her research career at the Hastings Center. And thanks to Kate for conducting the interview. If you'd like to check out what our Office of Career Planning and Professional Development has to offer, you can go to our website at qne.is/careerplan or follow us on Twitter at careerplangc. Thanks for listening.